did to this this outcome. So
complicated tale.
It's a very complicated tale. I do have an interview with Lisa that I'll likely be publishing some point in the next day or two, and it might run on Wednesday morning.
So. Okay. Okay. Great point you make about these guys being local conservation officers and the people who work for the organization, local people who have dedicated their lives to conserving wildlife, not the other way around. And as you say, the decision surely came from way up the chain. And when you're talking about that, you're talking about things like liability and litigation and concerns about exposure. And they don't, you got to think that somebody way up the chain says it doesn't really matter exactly the, you know, the circumstances that surround this. What matters is that we are not legally exposed, which often works. That's the way a lot of government and corporations work. And
yeah,
it's very, very difficult for a local community to deal with that.
For sure. And I think to put that in plain terms, it's as simple as if one of those bears that does not seem to have harmed anyone or have been aggressive at all were suddenly to kill a child, attack somebody, unlikely as that may be, then suddenly everybody's pointing the Conservation Service saying, why didn't you kill these bears?
Exactly, exactly. But just before you go, what else can people do on this front, Jamie, if they want to get involved?
Yeah, so I think
in a productive way.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, number one, everybody needs to manage their attractants. So that means picking your fruit trees, making sure you clean up your barbecues, all those things that might be luring bears, grizzly or black bears to town. The city, you know, I think also contacting elected officials is a great way to exert pressure, both city council, regional directors of the RDCK, maybe your MLA, and talking about waste management and enforcement of managing attractants. You know, I've lived in this area for 16 years, and we keep having these same conversations every time a bear is killed.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly some things are changing for the better. The city finally installed those new garbage bins in a response to public pressure, for example, but they haven't switched to weekly garbage pickup during bear season, which is something I've seen a lot of the public demanding. So, you know, taking responsibility for your attractants is probably the big number one takeaway for this. But I think let's just all remember that we live in a community where we all have to get along, and we can probably come to a solution on how to solve situations like this as a community, rather than, you know, divided into silos and attacking one another.
Great advice, great reporting. Jamie Frederick covering the grizzly bear situation. Thanks, my man.
Thank
and,
you.
And we'll keep an ear open for your next report, potentially on Wednesday morning.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. 5 summers ago, an unprecedented heat wave baked the Pacific Northwest, killing hundreds of people.
It was the most devastating weather-related event in Washington's history.
Danya Ayaz is the Climate Preparedness Program Manager with King County, which includes Seattle. She says the event was so deadly in part because the historically cool, drizzly region is unaccustomed to extreme heat and unprepared for it. Washington is one of the states with the lowest rates of air conditioning in homes, and many houses are designed to maximize sun and heat retention rather than cooling. So when temperatures spiked, homes got hot fast and stayed hot, endangering vulnerable people inside.
The most deaths that we saw were from older adults due to those indoor temperatures.
So as part of its first extreme heat mitigation strategy, King County adopted a goal of expanding access for low-income seniors to AC units and heat pumps, which also provide air conditioning. The county is also working with community partners to set up more cooling centers in locations that residents already frequent and trust. So as climate change causes more extreme heat waves, the county's taking steps to protect some of its most vulnerable residents. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks to our friends at CJLY in Nelson for that report. Up next, we're going to hear about a cool art project that you can visit in Burnaby, just around the Burnaby Village Museum in Deer Lake Park. And you can also at any community center or museum, etc., in the city of Burnaby, pick up a graphic novel, a short little comic about this piece of installation art, which is called Hakchu Pakchu. And I met up with the artist behind the installation, who also helped write the story for the graphic novel, Nathan Lee.
My name's Nathan Lee. I am an artist and designer living in East Vancouver. This is Century Garden, which is in Burnaby, right next to the Burnaby Art Gallery. And this is where a piece that I worked on some time ago, Hakchu Pakchu, is located on this site.
Can you describe Hakchu Pakchu?
Yeah, sure. Hakchu Pakchu is kind of a series of white and black concrete supersized game pieces that sort of like are integrated into the landscape. So they're sort of peppered around Century Garden, kind of making this historic presence known.
What was the process of being commissioned and designing and installing this piece?
With a lot of public art commissions, there's sort of a short list, and then you put a proposal together. So the proposal was really about this site, and through the proposal process, yeah, this work was kind of developed through that proposal process, and it really came about, I guess the big turning point for me, my background is in landscape architecture, so like site history is very important to my work. It's kind of foundational, like rigorous site history is extremely important. And so in digging into the history of the site, I think what was kind of this really key point for me was this game piece that was found underneath one of the historic buildings on this site. There was a small Chinese game piece that's kind of, after a lot of research, I kind of found out a little bit more about it, but this game piece is associated with games of chance, like Fan Tan is kind of like, I think, one of those games that we often think of, but it was used like almost as a poker chip, something that had a denominational value. But like more than the item itself, I think it just was a concrete and physical connection to Chinese-Canadian, early Chinese-Canadian community that had an impact on this site.
And you talked about a lot of research. What is the significance of this site to early Chinese-Canadian culture and history in this area?
There's sort of three levels to the connection to this site specifically. I think the piece sort of speaks to the broader, like, early Chinese immigration, but to this site specifically, there's sort of three areas. One is kind of the early agricultural history, so the land clearing was done by a lot of early Chinese labor at that time, and then also seasonal farming was executed by Chinese immigrants. The second piece is that after this piece of land was turned into, after it was a farm, it was bought by kind of a wealthy couple, the Sepperleys, who lived in that, well, the Burnaby Art Gallery was their summertime home. So, you know, quite wealthy and influential couple. As it turns out, sort of digging a little bit deeper, some of the seed money for this construction likely came from one of the family members who received money from construction of the railway, which again is associated with Chinese labor. And then we also know that they had Chinese laborers on site. And then the third level is really kind of about Century Garden itself. So Century Garden was built when Canada turned 100. It was a centennial project, and it was really about this kind of celebration of Canada and the virtues of Canada. It was also very close to the last year that immigration legislation, specifically against the Chinese population, was repealed. So we can sort of look at those first 100 years of Canada from a different perspective, like who is celebrating those first 100 years and what does that mean to different ethnic groups and different populations?
Right, yeah, because in 1967, the celebration was, I imagine, not having been there, like very focused on sort of white settler Canada.
Well, I wasn't there either, yeah. But I think that's the narrative. That's the narrative, certainly, that comes along with it, yeah.
Did you, and if so, what did you discover that surprised you?
I mean, I think this piece was significant for me in that, like I mentioned before, my background is in landscape architecture and site research is really important to my work. But I think this is the first time that I had a personal cultural connection to the site. And that was really exciting for me. It's changed the trajectory of my work, certainly. I think I'm much more focused on my own heritage exploration through my work than I was before. I think prior to this, I would sort of let the site tell me what the work should be. Finding a little nugget of Chinese history on the site was very exciting for me. I also should mention that this was really kind of a partnership with the city of Burnaby, obviously, but the Burnaby Village Museum, like the actual piece that was found underneath the chauffeur's cottage, they lent me that piece. Well, they didn't lend it. They escorted it to the fabricator, and the fabricator 3D scanned it, and then we supersized it in order to make these pieces. So the idea was to try to really have an accurate as possible representation of that game piece. But I couldn't have done it without the support of the Burnaby Village Museum. So
I want to talk a little bit about the comic as well was just put together. How did that come about?
Oh, yeah, that comic was really fun. That was an initiative that was definitely led by the city. They were looking at ways to kind of, I mean, it's a complicated narrative, it's very layered, and it doesn't always fit on a piece of signage. So they were really looking at different ways to sort of tell this nuanced story. Marlene got brought on board, and the idea was that it was kind of a dialogue between artists, and we all talked about it for a while, and the idea of comic book came up. I love that medium as a storytelling medium, as a narrative medium, and it was certainly in Marlene's wheelhouse. So yeah, we kind of came up with this collaboration, and it was really fun and nice way to talk about this work.
In reading it a few times, it really clearly lays out everything, and having the timeline at the end and just the story itself throughout, and characterizing the game piece itself. Really interesting how it can represent the Chinese immigrant diasporic experience just through a game piece.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. We talked a lot about how we were going to tell this story, and the idea of telling it from the perspective of the game piece was kind of a fun and accessible way to express that narrative. One thing that I always strive for in my work is like this, I call it heavy but light, this kind of balance between like, you know, this heavy subject matter, but kind of expressed in a whimsical, fun and playful way. I think the approach kind of breaks down barriers a lot of times when telling really hard stories. It's not an easy story for the city of Burnaby to talk about a darker part of its history. And this year, the city of Burnaby has also recognized that, which is really important. It's an important step. But these are not easy conversations to have. So this is a means of having those conversations and maybe not to make light of it, but in an accessible and sort of playful way.
Mm-hmm. Children are not the only audience, but it does feel like, you know, a kid could read the comic and come away with a more nuanced understanding of the history of this place and of just the story itself.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. My kids were pretty stoked that I got to write a comic book, so that was pretty fun, and yeah.
Yeah. I just think my background is in archaeology.
Okay.
And so the idea of being able to tell stories based on, like, the things that are left behind or the things that are sort of thought of like garbage or trash or just sort of lost items is always really interesting to me.
I think that was really, like, that piece is really interesting because I think the site in general, there's a strong narrative of the colonial narrative is very strong. There's a recognition of the site history and the Separately building is, you know, it's a building that's very well preserved, and that narrative finds itself on site through signage a lot. And kind of acknowledging that there are these other layers that are there that happen at the same time and that also influence each other, right? Like the story, the European narrative, the Separately mansion, you know, that was influenced by the Chinese Canadian community, the early immigration community, and that piece of archaeology is really the anchor that it's almost like the proof that there were more people involved here and there were more people that had an impact on the site.
Yeah, and the fact that it's just sort of lost under the floorboards is a really strong metaphor as well.
Yeah, that was a really fun discovery. And when they renovated the chauffeur's cottage, it's just up the way here, but when they renovated it, my understanding is that they kind of just pulled up redid the foundation in one spot, but there's like another spot that's underneath the building that, you know, I've not to encourage your listeners to do this, but I've certainly like poked around and there's still like a lot of garbage underneath there. And that, getting back to that idea of archaeology and those stories, like that garbage like is like centuries of stories underneath there, centuries of artifacts that probably tell a lot of different stories.
And I don't know how much this goes into your, or comes up in your artistic process, but what do you hope that people take away from both the sculpture and the comic?
I always think about it as kind of bringing light, unearthing stories, and bringing them to the surface. And yeah, just that every place that we occupy has these little stories that are buried under the surface. I really feel like my job is to tease these stories out and bring them to light, you know? And what I hope people take away from it is just that, well, A, history's complicated, and there's always more to a place than what we see on the surface.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations. Postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
brand new music from Concrete Vehicles. It's called Text Stop off an upcoming album. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. You just heard my story about Hakchu Pakchu. You can find out more about Hakchu Pakchu at contexture.ca, or you can head to the Burnaby Village Museum and just walk from there to access the Asian Heritage Garden and Hakchu Pakchu, which is spread out throughout the garden. Okay, that's it for me for Speak Up this week. We're going to leave you with a little bit more music, and then Democracy Now! Is up next, followed by, well, an open mic, and then we've got Beats and Eats, we've got the George Bastian Show, we've got Free Voices, Call Me Negotiator, The Arts Show, Analog Archives, Wham Bam East Van, 60 Minute Stage Drive. It's just great stuff all the rest of the day, so enjoy. I'm away next week, so you'll hear either a pre-recorded version of me or some other stuff, and I'll be back in a couple weeks, so take care of yourself. This is new music from Plow. It's called Blue Mountains. See you next time.
Blue Mountains. Water from the fall.